Welcome back to The Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I'm your host, Dayton Rumbold, and you're listening to episode 112, a special interview with Brent Nussbaum, our CEO. Brad Formsma, the host of the Wow Factor podcast, Words of Wisdom, takes over our studio today. He interviews Brent about his early childhood, life as a CEO, and how he uses the business to glorify God. You're not going to want to miss this featured exchange.
Today, I'm in Hudson, Illinois. Got the privilege to be in the studio of Nussbaum Transportation, sitting across from you, sir, Brent Nussbaum, CEO of Nussbaum. And I got to say, I'm often asked, how in the world did you get introduced to another great company? Well, this one is kind of a fun story. One of our previous episodes, your CFO, Bill, was listening and said, we like this idea of I Like Giving, and it connects with our culture of generosity. And so here we are. You and I had a phone conversation, and so today's an exciting day to today's an exciting day for me because I get to talk about the ways of living generously with your team at work and beyond. Thank you, Brent, for having me and for being a guest on the Wow Factor.
Yeah, well, thank you for being with us this morning, Brad. We're honored to have you, and we love the topic around giving. We've got a little history of it here at Nussbaum, so take it away.
Where are you originally from?
Well, we're from a little town called Fairbury, Illinois, and Fairbury is about a little town about 35 miles northeast of here, where my parents grew up and where I grew up the first part of my life.
Okay. Take me into, we're in the teens. Brent, what's Brent like? Is he into sports? Is he a worker bee?
He was a troubled youngster.
I've heard of that before. Yeah. Takes one to know one.
Yeah, yeah. No, I actually, in my teenage years, my father, in his infinite wisdom, decided that if his son was not going to play sports, which my father really didn't care for, then it was best that he be working and working nights so that he stayed out of trouble. So I actually, during my teenage years, I worked in a work program, went to school part day, worked part of the day for my my father, and then on Friday nights, we thought it was great because we got to work 8 hours on Friday night. So we did everything you can think of, from fuel trucks to light maintenance on trucks and trailers, and it was good. I loved big equipment.
Well, and I always make my mom nervous when I say that, but you just talked about my favorite four-letter word, work.
Work.
And, you know, I think it's something that I can't ring home enough to anybody I talk to, the importance of learning how to work. I think we're created for it. That's my biblical worldview. And when we find a calling and find a purpose behind the why of working, it really gets exciting. And so good on your dad. Now, sometimes you can take that a little too far, and we're not going to get into that.
True.
You're shaking your head as if, very, very true, Brad. So take us now, here we go, into post-high school for you. School, where I feel like I'm so connected with you, is school wasn't your hot button like it was for me. I was trying to figure out how to escape out of there.
Yeah, very much so. But, you know, it could have been in the genes. My father only had an eighth grade education. He grew up on a farm, 9 kids in their family. They didn't have a lot materially, so his father gave him a choice after eighth grade. He said, son, do you want to stay home and work on the farm, or do you want to finish high school? And he said, I want to stay home and work on the farm. So he went on and eventually went to the Army and came home, got married, had 7 kids. But when I was in high school, I just wanted to get through high school. You know, I really didn't have a big desire to be there.
Oh.
And after high school, I didn't have a desire to go to college right away. But part of that was probably because I knew I could work. And there's that four-letter word again. And I could make good money as a truck driver back in those days. So I started doing that right after high school.
So Dad starts the business 1945, and it's kind of one truck, and we're off to the races. And then it grows some, and then as you leave high school, you're like, hey, here's my chance. So you get that CDL, is that what they call it, commercial driver's license?
Yeah, back then it was a Class D license.
Okay.
And my dad was he was an entrepreneur. He didn't just own the trucking company. He started a truck dealership, a Kenworth truck dealership. He started a truck leasing company, and he had a Oldsmobile Chevrolet car dealership back in its day. So he was kind of a serial entrepreneur, if you will. And but his biggest company and his probably greatest love was really trucking.
Yeah.
And so I kind of fell into that.
But you get the Class D, which isn't a slam dunk. I remember prior to my current work having a growing landscaping firm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And when I first started that, I had to get this thing called a CDL. The funny thing about this is that I went and bought the dump truck and then found out I needed the license. And I didn't have enough money to pay attention at this time. And so I failed my first CDL test. And I about cried with the instructor because I said, man, I don't know, other than my credit card, I don't know how I'm going to get this license. I think he had compassion on me and showed me how to check the air on the inside tire of the back dually. But back to you, those things require a physical every year.
Yes.
Take us into, you had a plan, you're going to go this way.
Yeah.
What was one of those first turning points for Brent?
Well, the first one was probably... about a year and a half into my driving career after high school, I went in for my annual physical and ended up getting a report back on some blood work that wasn't so good. So they pulled my Class D license at that time, and I had to figure out what that was. My father scratched his head and said, what am I going to do with him? So he put me in operations, and it took me about a year, and they never could figure out what they thought was wrong, and they gave me my Class D license back. Well, by that time, I was pretty entrenched in operations. So I, here's that four-letter word again, I worked during the day in operations, and then at night, I would get in a truck, and I would drive to Joliet or Chicago and pick up a load, and did that until I got married. My wife said, are you going to continue these kind of hours? And I got the message.
How old were you when you got married?
I was 27.
Okay.
So,
but there was an event before this. First of all, you advanced through your reverses. You have this kind of strange health episode that they never can track down. So that's a very interesting point in your life because it really redirected you into another side of the business. And you probably saw some of your leadership and entrepreneurial gifts start to, you know, develop there. But at 23, something major happened.
Yes. My father, actually, when I was 22, my father had a heart attack and ended up in the hospital, went through triple bypass surgery, and then really became, he just never, ever really recovered. And within a year's time, his heart went into a flutter one night and he passed. So here I am, 23 years old, big shock. My mother's 54 at the time. Wow. There's seven kids in our family. And none of us are in leadership, but a few of us are working for the company. And we're, you know, we're saddled with, you know, now what do we do? And that wasn't the only, we still had a couple of the other businesses. So we had to, I think it was a big wake-up call for me. Matter of fact, I know it was. And that's when I decided that my life of my enjoyment of life was going to change. So I gave my life to Christ when I was actually just a couple months after that. I decided that it was time for me to wake up And
you had grown up in and around this thing called church and Christian language, but it sounds like after your dad passing.
Well, I was actually running from church at that particular time.
So you weren't even faking it.
No, I wasn't even faking it. I hadn't been to church in years, and when all that took place, I don't think I'd probably been to church in 5-6 years, and other than maybe when I had a sibling that got married, and I usually went, and then I left really quick. But I think I knew what I needed to do in my life, but I was not ready to embrace it. You know, I knew who Jesus was, but ultimately I knew that I wasn't ready to join forces with him.
Okay.
So yeah, that happened when I was 23, and so I was kind of left with trying to figure out life without a dad,
and life without a leader at the business.
Right.
So all this is in flux. I mean, there were some other leaders, but you knew that as part of your family, there was the ownership and all that was kind of left with your mom. And I remember part of your story having to do with the Teamsters and unionization and some of the disadvantages that would bring. I remember you using the word legacy expenses and some debt. And just take us into understanding how does that work and how crippling can that be for a business?
Sure. Well, being a unionized business involves not only, wages, but it involves a defined benefit pension, which is very, very costly to the company. And it also involves these Cadillac health insurance plans that the union has. And what was going on back then, we were starting to see some non-union companies enter into competition in our industry. And they had lesser costs than what we did. And so it became really, really challenging to compete against those people. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I'm not here to berate labor unions, but I never, ever feel like it's good when there's another organization between you and the employee. It's never, ever works out well. And I really
couldn't agree more.
Yeah. I really got burnt out with being around union attitudes. And they weren't all like that. We had a lot of really good employees, but I just didn't like the attitudes that went along with.
So didn't you kind of get this idea that maybe it's just best to escape? I'm going to get out of here and go start my own deal?
For sure. Yeah, I was researching all kinds of businesses. I wanted to get out and do my own thing, and I did not want to be tied to a unionized family business. So as the story goes, I researched and researched and actually got to a point where I decided to launch my own small business. So I left the company. Should have never done that, but I did.
Well, you left at 32. I'm picturing there's at least, one or two kids around point. And
for sure.
And your wife, I look forward to meeting Cheryl someday, but I would imagine her security gland was a little upset, as shall we say.
Well, I don't know if it was if she was upset as much as she was willing to let me take a risk.
So I think it's a combo, right? Yeah. I look at my wife, Laura, who, is like, oh, my word, she doesn't like change. I like change, and I made a jump.
Yeah.
I think there's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're supportive. God honors unity. Unity honors God. But it's still like, well, how's this going to work? They, I had some safety of consistent income.
Yeah. Yeah. And she probably should have asked more questions. So within a year, it wasn't but a short period of time, I failed, and I failed miserably. And wasn't quite sure what I was going to do, so I came back and said, is there any way you would consider hiring me back to the trucking business? Well, that really wasn't where I wanted to be, but I had no other options.
Well, I remember when we were chatting, the whole idea that you own the failing that thanks for that vulnerability. And when Kyle, I missed. But because your relationship with God is in a different place now, you're praying about it.
Yeah.
And tell us that story, because that really got me. I think some people pray and they want God to give them a message in the sky, you know,
right,
behind the little airplane or
yep,
or in the sand on the beach. Yours came
either
a
happened
different way. Yeah, but yours is pretty good. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, you know, ultimately, in praying about it, God impressed upon me that I really needed to go back to school. And one night, I can still remember laying on my pillow at home, and I literally woke out of a dead sleep. It was as if God had touched me on the shoulder and said, had a Samuel moment and said, hey, you need to go back and get some education. So I had never considered that up to that point, and now I was 34 years old. And, you know, getting to the point of, is this possible at my age? And so I resigned from the company again, and I went back to school to get my formal education. My father, bless his heart, had left some money in a trust, and that allowed me to go back and do that. My wife was good about that, so I went back to Illinois State University and got a degree in international business, and then I went on to do a master's in international business out in Arizona at a small school that had a master's program in international business. And got done with that and was praying, Lord, what does this look like? Where are we supposed to look for work? And so ultimately, he led us to begin praying about Indianapolis, and for no particular reason. We didn't have family there. We didn't know of any particular companies there. And as we were searching, I ended up taking a job as a VP of marketing. Marketing was my love. I absolutely loved it, still do. And for a small business that sold digital color inkjet printers, large format, that were manufactured in Israel. And the whole fact that, you know, I was a believer, and the fact that they were made in Israel, you know, there was a connection there somehow, not quite sure what it was. But and they had a whole North American market for it. So I went to work for them, learned a lot about trigger graphics, learned a lot about framing systems and billboard graphics and whatnot, and had no idea as to why I was learning what I was learning.
Did you say trailer graphics?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
This is going to get good.
Yeah.
This is going to get good where this is going to go.
So
okay.
We were working with framing systems where you could put framing systems on the sides of trailers and change graphics out instead of sticking them on. And as we were doing that, I realized as I was working for this company that they were just extremely unethical. They were asking me to do things that were just way above and beyond what I felt like I could do. So I told my wife, I said, I can't stay at this company. Nothing was going to change. The leadership was too far gone. So other than praying for them.
Okay, so now we're at another turning point.
Yeah.
I got the degree, so I'm still back to the guy who could barely wait to get out of high school, then goes back and actually gets a business degree and an MBA just for good measure. And so that's kind of cool how that—
And loved it.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved school. It was—
Isn't
it
that
was,
fascinating?
It was, there was— Each class was like starting a new job.
But
really
here
was.
You are at a company, and your spirit is telling you, I need to make a shift. I don't want to give my life away helping other people who are unethical make profits and a living. So you go to prayer.
Right.
And this one really got me, because you're praying for an answer, again, not etched into the beach or through the air behind a plane. What happened?
Well, it just so happened that this company wanted me to start a new division for them, and they wanted me to shift my marketing duties to someone else. And they had a contingent of people coming in from Israel, and they wanted me to meet with them and whatnot. So I'm like, Lord, if My wife had always felt like I needed to go back or consider going back to the family business. And my feet were firmly planted. Nope, I'm not going there. Been there, done that, and I don't want to go there again. It's the same unionized trucking company I left. So, but finally things got bad enough that I just said, okay, I need to at least start praying about it because there were no other options on the horizon. And as I was doing so, one Monday morning I was going to work and I was, my wife and I prayed before we got there. We said, Lord, if you want him to leave and consider going back to the trucking company, he needs some clarity. You need to make it very, very evident to him. And so I go to work and I'm sitting in my office at 9 o'clock in the morning and I'm praying again, Lord, I need clarity. You need to really give me some strong direction. Within 5 seconds of praying that prayer, after I looked up, one of our trucks goes by the front door of that window.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never, ever seen one of our trucks go by the business before. And so I'm sitting there going, oh, man, that is not the answer I was looking for. I was looking for clarity, and you gave me the wrong clarity, Lord. But anyway, my boss shows up, says, hey, starting tomorrow, I want you to start this new division. And so I didn't share with him anything as to what had happened, but I called one of my sisters and I said, you know, nobody in the family knows anything about this. I need you to be prayerful for me. If this is something I'm supposed to do, I need some additional clarification. So please be praying. So she called me the next morning, said, hey, I was up at 4 o'clock this morning. It just felt like God moved me to go to Scripture. And she quoted some Scripture, and she said, I really feel like you're supposed to do this. So I went in, shared with my boss what took place, and he said, wow. He said, that's pretty compelling evidence. And so resigned on the spot. We agreed that that was the right thing to do in this case. So anyway, it took me 3 or 4 days to share with my mother what I had done. She had no clue, and there was no job sitting there waiting for me to go back to.
Oh, my word.
So you should be saying that for my wife.
Yeah.
who has now been through a failed business, who has now gone through 5 years of formal education and wondered what's next to this job, and now I'm leaving, and bless her heart.
How many weeks go by before your mom and family and the business starts to realize there is an opportunity for you to come back in? And oh, by the way, I'm still thinking we have this cloud called liability, union stuff hanging out there. So it's not like you're coming back into the rainbows and butterfly environment.
No.
You're going into something that's got all sorts of challenges.
I know all about that. So when I touched base with my mother, she was actually elated that somebody was going back at her, that I was going back into the business. Probably less so the general manager that was running the business while I was gone, because I was kind of a threat to his existence. And so they created a position where I did some special projects, also did some sales work. And I lived in Indianapolis for probably another year and a half before I moved back here. So that was how I kind of got back my foot back in the door. And now I had to convince the people that were still at Newsbound that I really wanted to be here.
Yeah. Because in the past, they're like, well, he's kind of come and gone a few times.
He's left before.
So at some point, there's a couple parts of the business, one that seems to be profitable, one that's got this burden, and you end up selling off the good part.
Yeah.
Well, that made my head hurt when I read that in your...
Nobody does that.
Why did you do that? And then take us into how one book started to give you a perspective change.
Yeah. So as I came back and we were working together, we had two businesses. We had Newsbound Trucking, back at that point, which is our unionized LTL business and truckload business. And then we had another company that had been started while I was off at school. And it did more dedicated type work and warehousing, and it was a non-union company. So that company was small but growing and profitable. And the other company was just struggling with these legacy costs that we were describing earlier. And it was not very profitable. As a matter of fact, it was just struggling. So as I was back and working in my position, there was an emphasis by the current leadership at that particular time on the non-union company, but there was not any on the unionized company. And we recognized that. And there were some things going on with the leadership that were not quite up to our ethical standards. And so we decided we needed a change of leadership because there was no convincing him that he needed a change. So
these are hard times
in business, aren't they?
Culture matters so much. And when you get somebody who's pulling in the opposite direction, it just muddies the water, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. We decided to make a change in leadership. And on the way out, he asked if he could buy the non-union company. And that was the most profitable asset we had. And it had the most potential, and I just said, well, I need to pray about that. So our family could have kept it, but I just sensed God telling me, let the business go, sell it to him, and focus on Newsbomb Trucking. So we go do that. And I think most people that would be looking at that from the outside would go, boy, oh boy, it isn't going to be long, and he's going to be out of business, and he's going to be wondering what in the world he did. But we didn't. I sensed God's direction so strongly that I had to believe, irregardless of what was taking place, that God was going to see us through whatever was coming our way. So he moved off with that company, and I was set with a struggling LTL truckload company that I had absolutely no clue how I was going to turn around.
Hey, tell us, what does LTL mean?
Sure. LTL stands for less than truckload. And so if you were a mom and pop store and you ordered a small shipment, somebody came in and said, Brad, I need 2 boxes of widgets today. And you said, well, I don't have them, but I'm going to order them and I'll get them in 2 days. You would get an LTL shipment.
Okay.
Versus a full truckload,
okay,
which is what most of the large box stores order in.
Okay. And then what is a dedicated?
Okay. So dedicated is when you have let's take a manufacturer like Caterpillar. Caterpillar is moving parts from a plant that they're producing to another plant that is producing another part of that tractor. And then sometimes they're shipping it right back to the point A again. So anything that moves in a dedicated round-trip loop, or it could move from point A to point B to point C and then back to A again, is what we call a dedicated.
Okay, good. Well, I think that helps our wowzers understand a little bit of the trucking business. So take us now, I just wanted to move along with, where does the book Loving Monday fit in? Because work's hard, there's stress, there's uncertainty. I appreciate the prayer life, but I also know part of reality is there's stress when things, there's more month than money, you will.
Yeah, there was a lot of those. So we had to look at the environment we were operating in. I'll get to that story by sharing this. We looked around at the LTL environment, and LTL was going this way, and full truckload was going this way. And the reason is all the mom and pops that were in business back in those days in small towns and cities were going out of business, and all the big box stores were growing. Your Home Depots, your Walmarts, Sam's Clubs, and the whatnot. And when those people ordered, they ordered in a truckload quantity. So we looked at that and said, we think we need to get out of the LTL business because we're seeing people that are getting out now, And it was just not, it wasn't feasible to stay in that business, especially as a unionized LTL carrier. So we actually put that division up for sale, had it up for sale for a year. We had another buyer that came along, another unionized company that wanted it. We worked at it, and then 911 came along. And the economy started going south, and he said, we just can't pull this thing off. He said, I'm afraid that we're going to have to back away from it. So we went back to the Teamsters Union and said, we want to survive, but in order to survive in a largely non-union market today, we need some cost savings here. We need a 401k with and we need a copay on the insurance. And they just looked at us and they said, we're not going to let them vote it. I said, why not? He said, because it would set a precedent for other union companies. So he said, well, if that is your answer, then we have no choice. So we're going to have to get out of that business. So we did a 60-day WARN Act notice. We notified our people that we were getting out of the LTL business and we're going to continue in the truckload, full truckload business at the end of the year. And yeah, it was a difficult time. Two-thirds of our business was LTL. We laid off over 200 people. It wasn't something I'd ever want to repeat again.
Yeah.
Just personally, it took a toll on me and everybody that worked for us. Because nobody wants to ever put anybody out of a job.
Not if you have a heart and care about people, and you do. People first. In fact, purpose-driven, employee-owned is on the sides of these trucks. I'm intrigued with last night I flew into O'Hare, and then I'm driving down to Bloomington Normal, where we're just outside here in Hudson, Illinois, and I passed one of your trucks, which is good because I was speeding and he wasn't. Okay, we'll just put that out there. But I know
he had a governor and you don't.
Oh, he had a governor and I don't. Okay, we won't tell the friends at National that.
Sure.
Well, I noticed on the side of the truck this big plastic between like the underneath the trailer. And I don't think it was so that I wouldn't, like, sneak under there, Smokey and the Bandit, if you will. And then I also noticed something over the wheels.
Yes.
So why do some trucks have that and some don't?
It depends on how much you care about fuel mileage.
Oh, well, hey, that's going to go somewhere because you have over 700 trucks on the road.
Actually, 550, but
okay.
You're close.
So you have over 550 trucks on the road and many more employees than that. I would think every just little drop of diesel fuel adds up at the end of the year. Of course, that makes me think about something. You were at a conference and you bumped into some guy from the Daimler Freightliner group. And I think somebody else had been saying, hey, they've got a more fuel efficient engine. And I was really struck by that because I'm always talking about the seven ways of living generously. And one of those is generous influence. And we learn from each other. And sometimes we get connected to each other. Or we get ideas that I say God's helping us get to where we need to go. And that that discovery kind of helped you shift to the trucks that you'd ultimately use.
Yep.
Long term, and that's been a big impact for your bottom line, which of course ties back to, hey, we're about generous giving and biblical stewardship over here. So the more we can save, the more we can give.
We can give. Yep. Yeah, we ran into somebody back in about 2008 at a conference, and he was talking about how he saves money in fuel, and he was talking about how he specs his truck and what he does in order for his drivers to be able to do that. So after the conference, we called him up and we said, you know, we've heard a little bit about that, but tell us more. And so he was really, really helpful. His name is Royal Jones. He's from a company called Mesilla Valley, which is a big trucking company. And from there, it actually started the trek of going down, how can we save fuel? not only for the environment, but also for our bottom line. And how can we use that, you know, to honor God? And today we're one of the top fuel mileage trucking companies in the U.S. We've been written up numerous times for that. And we continue that trek. We teach our drivers how to drive for fuel mileage. We actually started teaching them how to drive for safety. And when you teach them how to drive for safety, you get fuel mileage as a byproduct.
And that might lead us to best fleets to drive for Hall of Fame in 2022, 2023. They're up on the wall behind
us. Actually, yeah. Before that.
Yeah, and way before that, of course, you were winning other awards. I'm so intrigued with how it doesn't seem like God wastes things. And you're a little stop off, if you will, at the graphic world and the trailer graphic world takes us to today. When I pulled in, I saw the side of one of the trucks that has a abbreviated psalm. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted. Mm. And other times I'll pass your trucks in other states and I'll see things about we're purpose-driven, employee-owned. Or employee-owned, purpose-driven, depending on how fast you drive past that truck. It kind of blurs. You're picking up on maybe I've got a lead foot. But anyway, I love how your marketing and your messaging and then pulls through to today and over 550 trucks. But when you go out there and put that on the side of a truck, boy, is that just a target to either you better live what you're about or the phone calls aren't going to be so good.
Yeah.
That's really cool how you do that, though. I really appreciate your trucks. They're clean. They're quality. We talked earlier about doing things with excellence. The minute you walk into your headquarters, you can feel a sense of peace and a sense of excellence. Even the studio we're sitting in, I mean, this is as good as it gets. Feel like I'm sitting with Dave Ramsey.
Okay.
That was your moment to say. Yeah. That was better. That was your moment to say, I feel better than I deserve.
Yeah, right? I feel better than I deserve. So just a couple years after we had shut down our LTL division. Now we're a small company, 12 people in the office, 77 truckload drivers that were all owner-operators, actually. We didn't own any trucks. We just owned trailers. And I'm trying to figure out how in the world we're going to survive after just shutting this big division down and selling off all the equipment, the real estate that we didn't need. And a driver, his name's Jerry, walked in one day, and Jerry had been with us a while. And he handed me a book, and he said, have you got just a minute? And I said, yeah, I've headed to the airport, but yeah, I can do that. And he said, well, I really felt like God was impressing me to give you this book. And it's called A Loving Monday. And the author's name is John Beckett. And John owns a company out in Ohio, very successful man. But John ended up coming out of high school and going to college, ended up becoming an engineer for, I believe it was Boeing. And his dad owned this small heating and oil manufacturing business back in Ohio. And about a year after John had gone to work for Boeing, his dad calls him up one day and says, hey, son, will you come back to work for me? Will you consider that? And he does. And thinking that's just be great to work with my dad. Well, about a year later, his dad suddenly dies. And John is sitting there going, well, what am I going to do with this business? Do I shut it down? Because it was just a very, very difficult time. It was a small business. They had a fire. John sensed, or should I go into some type of ministry? And John sensed God tell him, John, I want you to make your business a ministry. So he started changing the business around somewhat, running his business on Christian principles. As people would come into his business, he would take people off the street that were alcoholics and drug problems. And as they came off the street, he had started a nonprofit business. And if they did well there, he would transition them over to the other business. But he really sensed that, and he started Bible studies. He really sensed that God wanted him to run his business as a mission. I had taken that book along with me as I flew out to the East Coast to visit a customer. And on my way back, I finished that book coming back into Chicago. And it was just crystal clear. God didn't want me to run from that business. What God wanted me to do was make that business a mission, make Nussbaum a mission. So was it easy? Was it something that we decided to do the next day and everything was good after that? No. A lot of challenging moments. Part of that was our tithing. You know, what do? My mother would always wait till the end of the year, and she'd see how much we made, and bless her heart, she would give out of what we made. And I looked at Bill, our CFO, and I said, Bill, we've got to change that model. From now on, we're going to start giving monthly, whether we have it or not, and we're just going to see what God does. And so we started doing that and started giving more and giving more and giving more and just watching what God did with it. Did he bless it and say, you know, a year later we were cruising? Absolutely not. But I believe God wanted to see our heart in that.
Obedience, long obedience over time, it seems to be how he works in that realm. He's not a give to get God, but he certainly has blessed your company and what you're about today. In fact, mission to honor God through generous giving and biblical stewardship. So if you're going to say that, you know, I think waiting to the end of the year, bless mom's heart and bless a lot that do this,
right?
Because a lot of giving happens in late November and December. Yeah, you know, that's fine. But, you know, I always say, why would I only want to give 1 month out of the year? I mean, I want to have the joy throughout the year. In fact, daily, weekly, monthly is our motto. You know, there's just something about the joy of giving and the refocus that it's not about me and it's about others.
Yes.
Has that tithing thing increased a little bit, or could you bring us into a little bit of maybe the types of things that you get behind at Nussbaum?
Yeah, we typically are giving to Christian organizations, but we're also giving to organizations that demonstrate it can't be just we're running an orphanage over here, or you know, we're doing something for a church over here. But I'll give you an example. Cool things. We have a organization called the Midwest Food Bank here, locally, and they're Christian run. They've grown substantially. God was moving them to take their mission overseas, and so they flew into Kenya, not knowing what in the world God was going to do there, and ended up running into a pastor. And that pastor, right during COVID, little did anybody know the churches were all going to be shut down, and God was calling him out into something bigger. And he was watching to see what was going on with the youth over there, because in Kenya, they have a real, real challenge with the youth over there. If they don't find employment by the time that they're in their early 20s, they typically end up joining gangs. Hmm. So they found somebody here locally that was producing what they call tender mercies. They're these little protein bars. And starvation is a big, big deal over there in Kenya, or lack of food, let's put it that way. So they found a manufacturer over in Kenya that would produce them. And then they started producing these. And in the meantime, I'm telling this story, I'm trying to put it all together. There was another organization here locally called Spread Truth. And Spread Truth teaches people how to minister. And he started doing this in New York City a number of years ago. And Spread Truth came together with Midwest Food Bank and this pastor in Kenya, and they started employing pastors teaching these youth pastors how to spread the gospel and at the same time have soccer events. And after they spread the gospel, after the soccer events, then they pass out these tender mercies. And it's grown by leaps and bounds. Hundreds of thousands of people have been affected by this. So it's just a cool organization that we were able to get behind and support on a monthly basis. We support Alliance Defending Freedom. Yeah. We love those guys, what they do. Focus on the Family. And there's numerous others that do some really, really cool things on behalf of.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I was thinking about how you hire character first, which is interesting when someone says, well, you know, we look for people with integrity, good work ethic, care about the customers. And then, you know, if they have that mindset and that wiring, then we can train them to do about anything. But how do you police that internally? Do you find that other employees kind of, it's not just you managing that.
Right.
It seems like if somebody comes in and they're not aligned with those, they're not going to last very long.
They're probably not going to get hired.
Yeah.
I mean, we're trusting, we're praying, we're trusting our discernment. We are hiring for character first. Our belief is that if you hire for character, you can teach them to do about anything.
Yeah.
And we're looking for the long term.
Yeah.
We're not looking to hire somebody, and I need to be careful how I say this, but somebody that's 5 years before retirement. We want people that are here to grow with us. And if you hire people with good character, they refer people of good character. Nobody wants to refer somebody that becomes a blight on them if they don't work out.
Well, and your mindset's really, really strong there because you're in an industry where I suspect there's a lot of turnover. I travel enough to see trucks all the time. They're advertising, hey, come work with us. And I find it interesting. They lead with the hourly rate.
Oh, yeah.
And they attribute that to be the value. And I'm like, how stupid. I mean, the money will follow. What if you go work for a company that cares about character and you? They're probably going to take care of you financially. But who, you know, the idea of going to work just for a paycheck, and we'll get into a lot more of that with your team tomorrow as we talk about the why behind when we go work and when we show up and realize that when we do our job and do it well, it actually gives and benefits a lot of others.
Well, if we can go back for a second and talk about the Treader graphics. So if you
I knew you were going to go back to that. I can tell it's still in your blood.
Excuse me. You don't have to get too far down the road and see. If you see our Treader graphics, you have an idea of what we stand for. Faith, family, character. And as you look at our messaging, you either agree with it or you don't agree with it. So they're doing two things. They're giving people an idea of who we are, what we stand for, and we're witnessing to people. If I could go off a second and just, I just had a driver this week, maybe it was Friday of last week, came up to me and one of our graphics on the sides of our trailer says, "Forgiveness brings freedom." And he and I were talking and he said, "You know, I've been here 6 months." He said, "I wish I'd have been here 20 years ago." And he said, "Those graphics," he said, "they're really, really powerful." And I said, "Well, thank you. I appreciate that." And he said, "You know," he said, "I haven't spoken to my mom in 20 years." And he said, "I don't know what it is." He said lately, but he says, "Every trailer I'm getting has 'Forgiveness brings freedom' on it."
Ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding.
I said, "That's awesome." I said, "That's God giving you some direction."
And the graphics said, aren't just for the motoring public.
Yeah, exactly.
They might be for the Nussbaum employees as well.
And he said, "I'm." He said, "I just called my mom." He said, "A week ago," and he said, "She just broke down crying."
Wow.
And he said, "I told her, I said, Mom, we're going to have to take this in baby steps. but he really feels like, he said, I felt like that message really impacted him in a large way. And then we've had so many. We get them weekly. I have one I just want to read here from somebody that says, I lost both mom and dad to a drunk driver about a year and a half ago. It takes a long time to turn the corner from that kind of grief, but the Lord is getting me there. Twice in that time, I have seen your posting on a truck from Psalm 34. It is an encouraging reminder that the Lord's presence is with me and greater than the evil in this world. Thanks for putting out scripture for all to see.
Wow.
And so...
That's heavy.
Yeah.
That is heavy stuff.
But it's a reminder that part of our witness on a daily basis is not only in the way that we are touching, weaving a positive encouragement with all those we come in contact with, whether it be our customers, whether it be with each other, whether it be with our vendors, but also the traveling public, because they are dying for a positive message in this world.
Hi, this is Lisa from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit nussbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.